Good morning, everybody. It's Mark Steiner. Good to have you with us here on the Mark Steiner Show and your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. We're going to take this hour to talk about the national election. Next hour, we're going to look at talk to a number of young people about the election from a youth perspective. We'll be talking with Lizzie Jackson from Hip Hop Caucus and Kayla Tarrant, University of Maryland student who is working around youth and college votes, and we'll be talking about what all that is and then talk to some young high school students in Baltimore about what they're pushing. But which are all very lovely and positive. But the question I think we want to ask in some ways today is what is happening in our world at this moment? You know, what is this election telling us about ourselves, about our nation, about the depth of the divide, about what it means to be an American, about race and racism that permeates the country, it seems, where so many wealthy vote liberal and so many white working class people seem to vote against their interests. You know, we've learned a lot about in this election that we didn't want to learn. Maybe we do want to learn it, about the manipulative inner working of the Democratic National Committee, or how plutocrats and fat cats like Trump avoid paying taxes while we pay ours, about what Bill Clinton did post his becoming president and his own avarice to move ahead, and the misogynist screaming these incredibly hard slurs about Hillary Clinton while her opponent just wants to grab certain body parts on women. So, you know, and it seems in many ways that both major parties are splitting apart. Corporate establishment, conservatives and liberals, are being unearthed by this kind of populist upheaval explosion from the right and the left. So where does all this take us? That's part of what we're going to explore this hour as we're offing out. Most of you probably have already figured out who you want to vote for, but do tell us who that would be. We'd like to hear your thoughts about all this at 410-319-8888. You can write to us here at talk@steinershow.org. By email, you can tweet us at Mark Steiner. I'm in studio with Dr. Kimberly Moffitt, Associate Professor of American Studies at the University of Maryland, Baltimore County, co-editor of Blackberries and Redbones, Critical Articulations of Black Hair, Body Politics in Africana Communities, and also the Obama Effect 2.0, her latest work with a bunch of others around the country, Eugene Craig, grassroots activist, third vice chair of the Republican Party here in the state of Maryland, and John Nichols, back with us again, national affairs correspondent for The Nation and co-author of People Get Ready, The Fight Against a Jobless Economy and a Citizenless Democracy. And welcome, good to have you all with us.
Good morning.
It is an honor to be with you.
John, how are you doing, man? It's good to hear your voice.
It is good to hear your voice. It's good to be on with my fine colleagues who I think I've been on with at least one or two of them before and have great respect for, and kind of remarkable, I will tell you, to end this campaign in what could potentially be a civil discussion.
Yeah. So, I mean, give me – I read what you wrote about Wisconsin and the race happening there in the nation yesterday, which I found really interesting. But to me, in some ways, that's emblematic of this divide we're facing in America. And I'm just – you know, you always have a very positive view of where we might be going, but it seems kind of hard.
That's my positive – view maintained through these times.
Yes.
What you're going to ask me.
Yes, I am asking.
Sure, I have great faith in this country. I always have. I mean, not because this country has done everything right. It's because this country has pretty much lived up to Winston Churchill's very wise observation that Americans will always do the right thing after they've exhausted every other possibility. And, you know, it is my sense that this is a campaign of exhausting every other possibility. And we come to the conclusion, and I will tell you, here's where I see it now, and really interested in what other people have to say, because I don't think there's necessarily a right conclusion when you're less than 24 hours before the polls open. In fact, the one thing at this point that is almost assured is that you can make a fool of yourself very easily by predicting things that don't happen. But here's what I think where we've gotten. I think we are at a point now where it is the likely bet, the non-surprising bet, is that Hillary Clinton wins this election. Obviously, the surprise, which we have had suggested to us by the Brexit vote in Britain and other developments in recent months, is that there's a hidden Trump vote. It's stronger than expected, and that he wins. If he wins, this country is going to be shocked, and the world will be shocked. And you will see I think a pretty intense reaction there. So, but let's go for a second, in just a second, on that prospect that Clinton prevails. Then, here's the fundamental question, and this is why elections matter. Does she prevail by a substantial enough margin to get pretty close to 50%? We've elected presidents with less than 50%, a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
But does she get pretty close to that? Does she have a clear victory? And do Democrats take the Senate? If those two things happen, then, you know, essentially it's Clinton's night. And while there will certainly be blowback and criticism and anger, it will arguably be relatively muted, a little bit muted, because you've had a clear result. And so, to be very blunt about it, those who want to, you know, settle in a little bit, you know, have something a little bit more comfortable, they have to look for a clear result one way or the other. And so that's what I think we'll be watching for tomorrow night. But I think Clinton could make a very bad mistake.
What's that?
If she has a clear result. And that mistake would be to assume that people really do want to settle back in, that they want to. I think everybody would like to have things be a little calmer, maybe a little more respectful. But what this 2016 election has shown us is that in both parties and across this country, there is a huge sense of disenchantment and frustration with our politics. And to simply assume that that goes away on November 8th would be a big mistake. We are divided, but the one thing we're kind of united in is a sense of disenchantment. And that, and the next president's going to have to address that.
Dr. Tibley Moffitt.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with John that I've always said fairly consistently since we knew who our two nominees were that no matter what, we're so fixated on November 8th, but the conversation really needs to be about November 9th and beyond, and understanding that it is such an extreme or varied forms of disenchantment across the nation that we've got to figure out what reset button we hit and try and start grappling with some of those issues instead of believing, regardless of the outcome, that that is, you know, some measure of clearly this is the direction we want to go and let's move forth. There's a need for us to really have some serious conversations about how to move forth.
So I'm curious just how we think that happens. I mean, you know, we don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. It's hard. And by the way, Eugene Gray is going to call in. He got stuck in a meeting. Our one of our resident Republican commentators here on the show, and he'll be here shortly, hopefully. But you all can be here. Maybe that was a ghost from Christmas past flying through the studio here. 410-319-8888 is the number. Please.
That's just how unstable things are.
That is so true.
We didn't expect that to fall, but it fell. 410-319-8888. We do want to hear your thoughts and ideas about this election and where this country's going, where it may take us after November the 8th. We really do want to hear that. You can also write to us here at talkatsteinershow.org. My friend Art Megiddo, who's a wonderful author, wrote, on November 8th, America has a rendezvous with destiny. I pray the future is proud of us.
Good line.
Yes.
It's a great line, but I mean, yeah. I'm already not proud of America.
But maybe we could surprise ourselves.
I'm hopeful. I remain idealistic on that as well.
Well, one of the things that really struck me in conversations we had over the last couple of weeks, and it was a really interesting conversation we had last week. Bob Zellner was part of it. I don't know if you both know who Bob Zellner is.
Of course.
Mm-hmm. For our listeners who didn't hear that show, Bob Zellner is a guy who's was born in Alabama. His father was a Klansman who left the Klan, which inspired him. And he became the first white field secretary for the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee and has continued to organize and devote his life to fighting racism and to organizing in poor white communities. And we had a show about that with two women from West Virginia who are both activists and anti-poverty workers and a young woman from Colorado. And we talked a lot about this divide in America and how much race plays into it. Their argument being, and this because it was a contentious argument at the end, that actually we'd like to explore in some greater depth in coming shows, which is he was using the Fannie Lou Hamer argument that you can organize with Klansmen and don't talk about race or racism first, but you need to organize and show people's common interests so we can build a common movement. Others saying, no, racism is so deep, you've got to combat that first. So, but that is a real deep divide and discussion about which way to go for people who consider themselves left or progressive or whatever they want to give ourselves. But this election has in many ways brought that and misogyny to the fore. We'll get to misogyny in a moment. But so what about them? And so how does this play into our future once, let's say, with any luck, that somebody like Hillary Clinton is elected? And how do you think, Kim, let me start with you on this one and then go to John, how this plays out in the coming year, 4 years of this next administration, and how if this gulf can be bridged. Is it bridgeable?
Well, I mean, I'm optimistic, as is John, in believing that as a nation, we have always demonstrated our ability to grapple with serious issues and then find a way, maybe not the ideal or perfect way, but find a way to overcome some of, and I think that's a part of who we see ourselves reflected among the world as well, that becomes how we see ourselves, that we are recognizing that, yes, there are flaws in our nation, but we are always willing to work hard to address and deal with those flaws that we have. This one is really interesting for me, though. It's interesting because I've been having conversations with my very conservative North Carolina friends, which is where I'm originally from. And I said in a conversation just yesterday that this feels like the moment where Christians have dropped Jesus for politics and have completely forgotten about some of the basic tenets that undergird what it means to be Christian and a part of a Protestant faith, all over whether or not they want to see a particular person in office because they don't want to see another person in office. And so it's really interesting to hear how folks are navigating this space of embracing a candidate who essentially completely denigrates every population or every segment of the population in this nation, but yet is being affirmed by the very individuals who are supposed to walk a particular way and believe in the humanity of us all. And I just don't see that happening. And I'm also not getting a very good response from folks when I ask that question. I have to be honest.
So John, and the screen here is not working. This is really a strange day, so I didn't see all these callers called in. So we're going to come to your calls after we hear from John Nichols. We're going to go right to the phones here, and I think that we'll go to Reggie and Nick. You're the first two callers up, so hold on. We're coming to your calls. John?
Sure. And I'm really looking forward to the calls because I think we'll get a lot of insight there. So I love this concept, or I don't maybe love it, but I'm fascinated by this concept of Christians abandoning something to politics. I would take it a step further. I would think that we've had all values abandoned to politics. And this is a big deal because fear is not a value. And in the November election this year in America, fear is the dominant reality. We know that both of these candidates are unpopular in some communities and in some instances fiercely unpopular. But neither of them is beloved. And so each of them builds their coalition, their potential winning coalition, with fear that the other side will prevail. And so we go back to 1932. I mean, it's almost a cliched reference, but it's the essential one. We have nothing to fear but fear itself. As long as it is possible to muster fear of the other candidate, of the other party, among, say, 45-47% of the electorate, we're just not going to get to anything akin to a good result here. I mean, you know, it's not like we're going to have, you know, some sort of wild outbreak of cooperation and comedy. And it's not comedy, but comity.
Right.
And this is a big deal. And so how do we get there? What do we possibly do? Do you know who I think is the most important person in all this? Interestingly enough, Barack Obama.
What do you mean?
And Well, I know there's a lot of people that don't like Barack Obama on the Republican side. And although, I don't know if anybody's noticed, but he's getting really popular in America. His poll numbers have been going up, up, up as it's gotten toward the end of his administration. And I think it becomes very, very important to make incredible use of the transition process. Now, if Trump wins, that's going to be harder, and we all know that for Obama. But even there, you know, the transition process becomes a very big deal. We've got a two-month period before the next president takes office. We have a very well-liked outgoing president, increasingly well-liked, who has the potential to use his bully pulpit in some instructive ways. And I hope I'm not being too romantic in suggesting that he should borrow a page from a president he respects a great deal, Dwight Eisenhower. And remember when Eisenhower did his military-industrial complex speech?
Right.
That was in that transition period. But if you look back historically, Eisenhower used that transition period to a young Democratic president, who he happened to like a bit, but he used it to do a lot of education of Americans, a lot of talking to them. And after this election, we need somebody to talk to us a lot about how to think about this country and how to go places. And I would just suggest, and I hope I'm not going on too long here, that President Obama should, for all the challenges and all the, you know, obstruction he's faced, everything, he should use that period to try and find some common ground. I think he's got the biggest potential.
So this becomes the moment where John and I actually diverge on perspectives, because as much as I think the president certainly has benefited from the election cycle and people beginning to see some of the good that he's tried to put in place over the last 7 years, I also think they see him as very much the culprit of why we are where we are right now. And so I go deeper with this concept of fear to say wholeheartedly it is about fear, but I also see it as being deeper than a fear of these candidates, and see it as a fear of what happens to white folks in this country. And so Barack Obama's presence, and then Hillary Clinton possibly maintaining that same trajectory of his politics that seemed to, in someone's head, privilege some groups versus others, I think they see that as something to fear. And so Barack Obama is not the person that people will look to say, yes, help us with this transition so that we can begin to heal. I think they see him very much as at the center of why we're at this very point anyway.
So let me do this and jump in and let our listeners who've been dying to get in this conversation join us here and go to them. And I think, as I said, we're going to go to Reggie first, and then over to Nick in Crofton, 410-319-8888. Reggie on the air. Thank you so much for holding on.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning, Reggie.
Yes, I just wanted to say that I just happened to be watching a show on the president, and I'm 52 years old, and I noticed that my mother was born in 1929, and I remember she always said that her father, who was born in 1878, never vote for Republicans because they'll have you standing in the soup line. And I always wondered what she meant by that. And when I watched that show on the presidents, and they showed Herbert Hoover being the president for the time that he was before Roosevelt became the president for, I think, approximately 12 years, you know, it was like a vast difference in how the country was when Hoover was president, as we all know, was the Great Depression. Mm-hmm. Then when the Democrat, Roosevelt, came in and basically put the country on a course that is still on to this day with, you know, all the programs that were created during the New Deal. But I'm saying, you know, Hoover was a businessman. And I didn't hear anything raunchy about him as far as his, you know, his behavior as a you know, a private person. But Donald Trump is a businessman, and also he is a businessman that seems to have no connection with the reality of the world that we live in as far as when it comes down to minorities. I mean, it's 2016, and this one man has basically polarized the country as if we were still in, you know, the Jim Crow era. And it's just really disheartening to me, being a retired Navy veteran and having have served, you know, with, you know, my fellow Americans throughout the whole nation.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe one of the reasons why we all got along as good as we did, because we were literally on the same ship. So the guys from Iowa, you know, meeting up with me from Baltimore, and you know, the guys from Texas and New York and the various other parts of the country, we all realized how much we had in common when we went to other people's countries as ambassadors from our ship. I mean, we all like McDonald's. We all grew up looking at the same television shows. But as soon as we get back to what we used to call the world, which is the U.S.,
right,
you just see everybody kind of like go back into their corner. And that's something that the Republican Party, I mean, I would vote Republican if they wanted me, but I mean, it's like going into a party and you see everybody that doesn't look like you and they don't seem to really want you there. It's like walking into a, you know, a bar with, you know, a bunch of bikers and, you know, and nobody's around. And I'm afraid because I like some of their ideas. Don't get me wrong.
I hear you.
But it's like, you know, they don't want me, you know. So it made me feel like when I was in the Cub Scouts and I went up to the area that used to be not far from where I lived at, but it was back when Baltimore in the 70s was very segregated. If you went across the railroad track, the white folk would beat you down.
I remember that very well. And vice versa. Yeah, I remember that very well.
And I remember going up there, and I joined the weed blow. And everything was cool until we went camping. And I noticed that when I had confrontation with one of my fellow weed blows, you know, that everybody kind of looked at me differently. And I kind of felt that a little bit when I went into the Navy, you know, and some places that I went to. I mean, I was actually the only black guy in the shop. I worked in aviation. Wasn't that many black aviators or aviation personnel in the Navy when I was in. So I was always that one black guy in the shop. But I, like I said, now I'm 52. I can look back in hindsight. Some of my friends that I'm still connected with that live in other parts of the country, they vote for Trump, which I can understand because of where they live at and the demographics and how they think. But that's all I really wanted to say.
Well, you said a whole lot. You said a whole lot, Reggie, and I really do appreciate the call and your service. It makes me think of one of my grandsons right now is on a ship himself in the Coast Guard going out towards Alaska. But take us to break here with your thoughts, Kimberly, because you were. I watched you react to Reggie. I couldn't see what John was doing, but I could watch you reacting. I'm curious what your thoughts were.
Well, lots of thoughts, but I mean, I just go back to the point that, again, we are dealing with something, you know, race in this country is in the very fabric of who we are as a nation. And so it's very hard to get that out of who we are. And so what we are experiencing with this particular election, and I know people struggle with seeing it just as about race because we are dealing with this misogyny that's very much a part of Trump's campaign, or at least a part of his rhetoric. So I get that piece, and I don't want to silence that to make an assumption that it is not significant. But I do think in terms of issues of race in this country that, again, we're at a point where white Christians are willing to drop Jesus to make sure that Trump is in office. Why is that? Something that is at the core of who you are and how you see yourself in this country, that you're willing to turn a blind eye to say that is not what I'm going to focus on. I'm not going to focus on how he's treated women over the years, you know, because he sounds mean occasionally with some of the comments that he makes that denigrate other groups, that I can look away from that and make sure to place him in office because I think he will help me in terms of my economic situation. But even at a deeper level, I think as a position to make sure that whites still maintain the position and privilege in which they have become so accustomed to in this nation.
We're going to take a very short break, and we'll come right back, and that John have at with that as well, and then I'm going to let you know that we're going to go to the phones right away, and we are going to go to the next two callers up. So Nick and Donald, hold on. We're coming to your calls. We want to hear your thoughts. Stay with us at 410-319-8888 as we talk to Dr. Kimberly Moffitt and John Nichols about what's about to happen in America tomorrow. Stay with us. Oh, Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. As we approach tomorrow's election, we are joined here by John Nichols, national affairs correspondent for The Nation magazine, co-authored the latest book he's done, co-authored People Get Ready, The Fight Against a Jobless Economy and a Citizenless Democracy. Dr. Kimberly Moffitt's in the studio, associate professor of American Studies at the University of Maryland, Baltimore County, co-editor of Blackberries and Redbones, Critical Articulations of Black Hair Body Politics in Africana Communities, and Obama 2.0. And Eugene Craig. Eugene Craig is not with us. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
Eugene, how are you? Grassroots activist.
I'm good, brother. I'm good.
Third vice chair of the Maryland State Republican Party. And you all are 410-319-8888. So, John, we're being right in here in a second, Gene. But, John, I'd like to hear what you think in terms of what Kimberly just said. Then I want to go right to the phones and get these folks who have been waiting so long.
But I still want to hear from Eugene and what he thinks when I say it.
Okay.
I miss him being in the studio so we can make that eye contact when I'm here.
Yeah.
He doesn't like us anymore. But John, go ahead.
Sure. Let me take a shot here, and then we may hear what other folks have to say as well. And I think what Kimberly said is goes to the heart of the matter. But again, let's extend. Let's take it one more step and perhaps make this a more difficult conversation because of some of the very wise things that Reggie brought to the table in his call. What Reggie referenced were those instances where people really can feel as if they're on the same page, where they can cross lines of not just partisanship and ideology, but of upbringing, of race, of class, and you know, and do find some sort of common ground. I hate to suggest that that has become more difficult in recent years, but I think there's an argument that it has because of something that we don't talk about enough, and that is the sort of obliteration of traditional media. And we used to have media in this country, you know, three television networks, the big local paper, few national papers, some radio networks that were incredibly flawed, incredibly failed in how they covered issues, but provided some sort of a central place where people tended to get their information, tended to communicate with one another, and then alternative media, as it developed as a counter to that, as a way to provide more information, to fill in the blanks, to fill in the discussion. What we now have is, in many instances, a dominance of the alternatives, which is fine, and I think we need them. But people are able to build their reality, their political reality especially, around a communication that simply reinforces often, not always, but often their worst instincts. And their fears, their sense of division. And so we end up in a situation in this country where we do have a good deal of commonality. We have a lot of areas where we could work together, but our inflow of information, especially in an election season, tends to be so reinforcing of our divisions. And even when we now go to supposedly neutral space, what do you see? And MSNBC, Fox, running whole hours of candidate speeches without much discussion. And then when you go to the discussion, it's surrogates who are absolutely committed to one candidate or another yelling at each other in many debates. And there's very little attempt, I should say, there is attempt by good journalists all over, but there's not a sufficient attempt to kind of look for that common space, which we might, dare we say, find an element of truth. And so I think what Reggie put on the table is really important because he's acknowledging that we can find our common ground. He's acknowledging and pointing out that often dissipates, you know, intense and difficult situations. But what happens if the new normal is a lack of common ground? And how do we deal with that politically? I think it's going to be very hard.
I think it is as well. Gene, you can you do something very quickly? I promise the listeners I get right to the phones here. So you want to get a quick thought on this?
Yeah. Just playing catch up here. I think Hillary's going to win a landslide tomorrow. And, you know, I think
so love you, Eugene.
look. One thing you guys know about me is that I live in realism. Right? I live in reality. You know, I think it's going to be between 320 and 350 electoral. I think she picks up North Carolina. I think she picks up Florida. I think this thing is over before West Coast polls even close. But, you know, to speak to Kimberly's points, I did hear the last tail end of it. You know, I read a lot of Jason Johnson's work. And, you know, one thing he pointed out very, very early on was the, the reactionary white rage. That came with the election and re-election of Barack Obama. And I think, you know, with the rise of the alt-right and Steve Bannon, you know, chairing Trump's campaign and, you know, quite frankly, you know, Trump pandering to the worst parts of American populism over the last couple of years, you're seeing a combination of that. The only issue, you know, for these folks is that the demographics aren't on their side. And you're seeing, you know, Hispanics come out at record levels. You're seeing African Americans still, you know, come out and vote at very, very high levels. With a little fall off in the Obama years, but it's still very high levels. And it's going to be tomorrow. You know, we're going to see a complete rejection and repudiation of that hate and bigotry.
Let's get to the phones where people are thinking out here. 410-319-8888. Clint, you're on the air. Welcome. Hi, Clint. Clint's gone. No, Clint? Okay. Let's go to Wally. You're on the air. Welcome. Wally, you there? All right, folks.
Yeah.
Go ahead. You're on the air. Welcome.
All right. Thank you very much for having me on. I wanted to say something regarding, you know, the comment was made regarding Christians compromising their beliefs. Personally, with me being a Christian and a black Christian at that, I have to support a candidate that is supporting Israel, and I have to try to look at a lot of different things. It was a difficult decision for me because I'm pro-life, and the other thing is I'm also pro-Israel. So my choice of candidate has to be based on, I think that's why what we have a certain dilemma as Christians is because we know the person is, and we're not all that happy with both of the choices, but we have to try to look beyond a lot of those other particular issues and things that are going on, and both based on our belief in Christ. And that's all I have to say. Thank you very much.
I'm curious, which candidate was that for you?
Well,
was it Clinton or was it just which one was it?
Well, you know, it's kind of, you know, I'm leaning towards the one that I want to lean towards would have to be Trump. Because at least I know that, you know, that group is not going to be pushing for a lot of abortion issues. I know they're probably going to support Israel. So even though he's obnoxious and I have a lot of issues with him, sometimes you got to hold your nose and make your choice.
Well, I appreciate the thought and the call, the honesty of your thinking. Go right ahead, Kimberly.
And I appreciate hearing from someone who ascribes to Christian values, but I hear nothing but dissonance and complexity in that response, that I can hold my nose to someone who denigrates sheer humanity and say that is who needs to be in office because this other candidate happens to be pro-Israel. I understand. I mean, I get that people are complex and we do make decisions based on how we are most committed to particular issues that candidates are running upon. But I really struggle that at the basic and core level, and I am no biblical scholar, however, the sheer understanding that we are to love our brothers as ourselves really disturbs me that we can then somehow just hold our nose as we enter into the polling site and decide that this is the person that we select upon when they have done nothing but demonstrated to us that they disrespect and denigrate humanity completely.
Let me go back to the phones. 410-319-8888. Let us go to Nick. You're on the air. I meant to say Nick when I said Clint. I'm sorry. Nick, you're on the air. Welcome.
Mark, thank you. Always a really good discussion. And you know, Mark, I always actually, I was going to talk about that last call, but no, that's not good radio etiquette. That brother has a right to think what he right. But
absolutely.
I will say, Dr. Moffitt, that's one of the answers you're looking for right there.
Yeah.
His response right there. It's what you're looking for when you ask Republican leaning people, how can you go away from the basic tenets of Jesus Christ? And so it's, and you answered it where it is very confusing. Let me just say this, Mark. I think that the Democratic Party, and John Nichols was definitely well-versed on all this. I watch him on a lot of stations he comes on, really like his work. I think Hillary Clinton, instead of, I'm not painting on all this, but instead of Jay-Z and Beyonce and LeBron James, how about jobs, investment, and reinvestment in some of the worst communities of all these different stripes in America? How about that? And she may have mentioned that. I just didn't hear that a lot during her campaign. I really am a strong advocate of jobs and reinvestment in America. I think that a lot of communities in East and West Baltimore can turn around. I think that a lot of strife and problems that are going on in all of these areas, it's not just inner city America, it's Rust Belt America. It's disaffected America. Right before your show, Mark, Amy Goodman and Michael Moorhead, hey, I hope everybody heard that. That was such an interesting discussion about one segment of America that is very disaffected. I really think that there can be job and investment plans that can be put in. Also, furthermore, and I'm not going to take up all your time because I know you have a bag of calls, Mark, but what does John Nichols think and all your panelists think about this? We need to rethink corporate America by saying, you know, the top CEOs don't need to be making $40 million a year with a parachute package. That will be more jobs. That will be a streamlined company where you'll be able to better serve whatever company, type of company it is, a more proactive, progressive type of company where the top people are not making, they're making very comfortable living,
right.
But it's more, and you have room for health care and benefits package that I think a lot of the rest of the industrialized world is going to things like, or have been going to things like that. And if you get a company like that, Mark, and the rest of your panel, that competes against these slothful companies that just basically are in business for the top 1% of their corporation to get these huge slothful. I like that word. I'm mentioning it because it
right.
is slothful to take $40 million and give it to somebody after they. After a lot of times they've underperformed, they'll mess the company up. So thanks, Mark. Thanks for listening to my comments. I'll listen off there.
Thanks much, Nick. John Nichols, he called your name out. Go first.
Well, I'll take the call out. Look, I think this has been a horrible, horrible, horrible election campaign. And I would say that even if we hadn't had all the time spent on learning about Donald Trump's personality and behaviors and frankly, Hillary Clinton's emails and all sorts of other stuff, the reason I think this has been a horrible, horrible, horrible election campaign is because we haven't gotten anywhere near a discussion about, you know, where we're at right now.
Mm-hmm.
And that discussion should certainly, it can and must begin with issues of race and class and national origin, immigration. There's all these very vital issues. But, yeah, there's an economic component to it as well. And what troubles me is that I think we're finishing the last campaign of the 20th century, maybe of the 19th century. And all of the discussions were very backward, very little thinking about where we're headed. I mean, we actually had a candidate saying, make America great again, i.e. go back. But the whole of the debate was empty. And here's the bottom line. We're 40 years into a process of deindustrialization, which is radically altering our job options right there. We're 30 years into a process of globalization that means that even if we do develop industries, new industries, or redevelop old industries, We don't necessarily get the benefits of it because our corporations, which were well referenced by the caller, are on a race to the bottom. We're 20 years into a digital revolution that has so radically altered how we communicate and, in many senses, even who we are. And we've not begun to fully incorporate all the potential of that, but also recognize the dangers there. And finally, we're 8 to 10 years into an automation revolution, which is going to so radically transform our workplaces and our work that it's hard to wrap our head around it. That's what we should have been discussing, at least a part of what we should have been discussing. Instead, we're going to finish this campaign without really having gotten very far as a country. And you understand, and I don't want to go too long here, just one final thought.
Yeah.
There is a decent chance that we end exactly where we started, with a Democratic president, with a Republican Congress, pulling at in opposite directions, with a very limited chance that we move forward on fundamental discussions about how we shape a 21st century economy. This is a messy situation we're in.
No, it is, and I agree with you completely. And, Gene, I'll let you jump in here real fast before we go back to the phones. I think because the book you and Bob McChesney wrote, I mean, was one of the best things you two have ever done together, I think. And all the things you've outlined are in that book. We didn't talk about the environment and energy in this election to any real extent either. And there's one stat in your book I just want to throw out for people to think about where we're going. We don't even wrestle with this. It stays in my head. I've been talking about this ever since Bob mentioned it. We talked about it. Was that the single biggest occupation in America is people who drive something.
For men.
And now we're talking about that becoming an automized profession as well in the next 20 years.
Just imagine very quickly, and here's would this have been a good debate question? We're all talking about the driverless car. Well, there's also the driverless truck, the driverless train, the driverless bus, the driverless everything. Well, in many states in this country, not the majority of jobs, but the plurality, or at least a plurality of jobs, is for men, and increasingly women, is driving. You take that away, you're taking away jobs that aren't going to be replaced by something else. I mean, what are you going to do? Become the mechanic that fixes, driverless cars? Well, they're going to need some of them. But the whole point of an automation revolution is not to create jobs for people, but to figure out ways to have less jobs for people. We haven't figured out how to deal with that.
To do in this kind of capitalist system. Gene, your thoughts quickly on that, and then we're going to go back to the phones.
I would love to jump back to John's other previous point about, with this election that we may, finish where we started. And I agree. I mean, I take it a step further and say when we're all done with this cycle, Hillary Clinton may come down and be one of the greatest Republican presidents we ever had.
Right. Let's go to Gene. You're on the air. Welcome. Good to have you with us, Gene.
Hello.
Good morning.
Awesome to be here. Awesome to be here. Thank you for the show on MSU Radio. I am a bear. I just wanted to point out something, and I think it's very important, just to backtrack a little bit. The call that called in before with the Christian views, yes, I am a Christian, and I'm going to make this very clear and concise with some historical facts and figures. When we look at the Republican Party, if he is very conflicted about his Christian views, I have long since seen this when I'm watching I watch a lot of Christian television, the propaganda. I hope he's still listening. Propaganda can come through a Christian. They're not perfect. They have views, as we've seen with the FBI director. We do see that he seems to be pretty partisan, even though he's supposed to be neutral. These people, these preachers are human. And when you look at the Republican Party, it's been historically white male. Now, because historically white male doesn't mean it couldn't be good for the country, but then when you look at their economic policies and look at places, like I'm from a place, grew up in Long Island, which has been predominantly Republican since I've been born and I've been on this earth 45 years, and you see the way that they structure their social programs, the educational programs, there aren't any. If you do not fit into a certain economic class, even if you're really a small businessman, you still struggle under the Republican Party, and you still struggle underneath their policies. So if he is a Christian, I don't like to say this, but the hustle or what they're hawking to Christians is that you already, your soul is open because you're looking for a word of encouragement, and then you get these preachers saying, if you vote, like specifically one preacher said, if you vote for Obama, was the guy from the 700 Club, he said the rapture is going to come even quickly. Well, Obama's been voted in twice. 20 million people have health insurance, and the rapture still hasn't come. So you have to look at things. You know, he has to see through. And can I be honest? I understand him because I felt the same way. They will have you thinking that the other party is the embodiment of the devil, but they will never show you their own, and love you, Mark, but their own white racist ways, and you're nothing like them. But I'm just saying, they will never show you that. They will never take the Bible and put their own feet to the fire. There are a few white teachers that come on these evangelical shows that talk about that. And in my years of watching evangelical television, 45 years of living, at least 40 years of memory, I've only seen two sermons, not even a whole segment, but two sermons out of all the Christian television I've watched that have talked about white male supremacy within the church, within their own structure, and within their own policies. So Israel is not going to be hurt if a Democratic president is in office, because ultimately God's in control. But he must also understand that it says in the Bible that once you receive Jesus, we are now all Jews. Also, some Jews may have a problem with that, but I wouldn't offend anybody. But that's what it says. You know, we're engrafted into the vine through the grace and mercy of God. Yes, we know they're the chosen people, but now he's engrafted all people into the vine. And that's why you have a mosaic of Jesus. It's not one culture, not one tongue. It's everybody. So I didn't mean to preach, but I need him to understand that, so that when you go into the voting box, you now don't have to vote. And can I also say this, as a woman, as somebody who's supposed to be so conscious and everything, I found myself, when I watch the news and when I watch the debates, I don't see Hillary, I don't see Trump. I see from a more spiritual perspective. I see the spirit behind everything Trump says, which is such a dominating, intimidating force of a group, of a gender that has been so oppressed. And I see a woman who has, she's been denigrated because she's not emotional, and so, she's not fuzzy and warm. But that's the type of woman that you need to have to deal with that type of man. And that, Jean, will come crumbling down in the society, that mentality.
Jean, I appreciate the call deeply. I mean, you said a lot, and very passionately. I do deeply appreciate the call.
She helped my argument in ways that I could not do, since I don't have the ability to lean on the scriptures in the way that she has done. So I greatly appreciate another perspective.
Let me try to get a quick call in here and get some closing thoughts from all three of our guests as we approach the vote. We have to make tomorrow, unless you've already made yours. I made mine. Have you voted yet?
Yes, absolutely.
Did you vote yet, John?
I surely did.
How about you, Gene?
Of course. You know, I wrote in Larry Hogan and Nicole Ambrose for president and vice president.
You cracked me up, man. I love it. Let's go to the phone. Let's go to Louise. Louise, you're on the air. We only have a couple minutes left. So give us your thoughts as quickly as you can, please.
Yes, hi.
Hi.
I try to be as quick as possible. I really don't understand this whole thing about focusing on religion, because throughout history, religion has been used oppressing people. The slaveholders used religion to justify, you know, justify slavery. Christopher Columbus used it for genocide of indigenous people. So I don't understand that, because, you know, religion has always been used to do that. I just wanted to say real quick that I've always been critical of the Republicans, people who supported the Republican Party, because I always thought that they voted against their own interests, until I realized that we as Democrats have been doing the same thing. Mm-hmm. And so if it's hypocritical for the Republicans to support Trump, it's also hypocritical for us to support Clinton, because, you know, the other guest is right. She will be the best Republican, you know, candidate or president, you know, ever. So that's just my thoughts about the whole thing.
I appreciate the thoughts. Thank you, Louise, for listening in and calling in. And let me go to our guests here and kind of round up our thoughts here. And John Nichols, I may begin with you on this. Go around the room here. Just round out what we think is going to be tomorrow. And I'm curious whether you think the Democrats are going to take back the Senate very quickly. I want to, since you observed this so closely.
Well, that's the first question. If we presume, as I think our guests have and some of our callers, that it's likely, not certain, but likely that Clinton wins, then the first question becomes, how does the Senate go? Because if the Senate is Democratic, Clinton has much more room to govern, and frankly, to govern in a more progressive way. But to get beyond punditry, because I think it's healthy to do so, I just want to close by saying that we didn't quite get to the misogyny part of this discussion.
No, we've done a lot of that in the last couple of weeks, but not today.
We didn't quite get – I know you have, Mark. I have immense faith in you. But let me just close off by telling folks that 100 years ago today, Jeanette Rankin was elected to Congress from the state of Montana,
right.
First woman elected to the United States Congress. She was elected as a Republican, and she was also an anti-war, basically pro-economic justice Republican. The parties change. They go through transition. And I do think that for all this other discussion, if Clinton does get elected, we are on the cusp of electing our first woman president, and we ought not underestimate that, but we also ought not underestimate what Shirley Chisholm told us the better part of 50 years ago, that when she ran for president, she found that being a woman was every bit as hard and perhaps even a little harder than being a person of color. And so if we look forward from this point, what we must recognize is that we as a country have a tremendous – we've shown over the last 8 years that we're not very good at diversity. We're not as good at it as we should be. And we may have another few years coming where it's going to be a great struggle. And we ought to all pause and take a good long look in the mirror, not just think about who we're voting for, but think about who we are and how we deal with these next years.
Kimberly Muffet, we have the...
Yeah, I think so. We end the show with John and I coming back together. because I so agree with that point that we are in a space of still struggling over what it means to have a woman with some degree of power. And
right.
This is significant power, even if people see it as all the work happening at our downstate elections and campaigns, and she becomes this person that is leading the country in a particular way. I think it is important to understand that we have struggled with the issue of gender in this campaign completely. And unfortunately, we've struggled even more so because women have participated in that oppression. And so when we are in a space where the oppressed help the oppressor, then it makes it very difficult to see the kind of radical change that we need in order to address issues regarding race and gender in this country, and we're not quite there yet.
And a final thought from Eugene Craig, Republican, still looking for his home. Go ahead.
Well, the good thing is that come November 9th, I get my party back, and America is a better place. We're still the greatest country on the face of the earth. We were still the freest country on the face of the earth. And, after this election, it's moving forward to 2018.
We are going to, I really do appreciate the three of you taking all this time today with our listeners. That you just heard Eugene Craig, third vice chair of the Maryland State Republican Party, John Nichols, national affairs correspondent for The Nation and co-author of People Get Ready, The Fight Against a Jobless Economy and a Citizens-Less Democracy, and Dr. Kimberly Muffet, associate professor of American Studies at the University of Maryland, Baltimore County, co-editor of Blackberries and Red Bones, Critical Articulations of Black Hair Body Politics in Africana Communities, and Obama 2.0. Good to have all three of you with us. It was a great conversation. We'll see what happens tomorrow.
Appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you all. Get out there and vote, folks. Get out there and vote. We're about to talk to some young people about what the vote means to them. Stay with us.